does get to an important question about what social media is for or what it's good for. And certainly we see that people are making various uses of it. One of those uses is flaming each other and sort of focusing on divisiveness, focusing on politics, spreading opinions.
In social media, initially when I joined Facebook, it was pretty much an egalitarian thing. It was just a lot of normal folks in there. Now I can't go, scroll down, one or two things, but without seeing an ad or a company's Facebook page that really wants you to come and deal with them.
You can't go anywhere now without just being bombarded with ad after ad after ad. And I'm like, okay, this is gonna make me not ever want to come to any of your sites anymore. I'm gonna find, it's almost like I wanna go back to the library.
To me, because I was in marketing, online marketing for a while, and to me, that's the difference, is the data that you're able to mine. I think everything else could be said of radio or of television or even of magazines. You can't, if you look at Vogue anymore, it's like, it costs you $30 and it's ads.
This time on the Plutopia podcast, we feature the entire Plutopia team in a discussion that explores social media, streaming entertainment, cancel culture, cartoons, gurus, and cults.
We are here tonight to talk about, wait for it. We're going to talk about social surfing.
Surf's up, dude.
We're going to talk about social media.
I remember when surfing meant like sleeping on someone's couch.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, the other day I suggested that we have this conversation, and part of the inspiration for that was my recent experience of a new social media platform called Clubhouse, which we have now all joined. And Susie was, just before we launched, she was talking about what she's been doing. So Susie, what have you been doing on Clubhouse?
I've just been hanging out in chat rooms, or not chat rooms. It's really interesting because you just go and you hear these. You remember when you had party lines? It's like a party line with like as many people as are allowed in. And some of the conversations that I have heard are absolutely hilarious. And I also have heard some that are really, really informative. There are those also, which I think are fun. But right now I'm really having fun with, like, when you got the internet and you were all about the cat videos at first and then you moved on to other things? That's where I am right now.
I still like the cat videos.
Yeah, me too.
Well, before we talk more about Clubhouse, Scoop and Maggie, what do you guys use the most for your social media?
I would say Facebook, probably.
Yeah, I'm Facebook and Instagram, but I seem to be using both less and less and less now.
Good for you.
I'm sort of exhausted by them. And it's not like a whine. It's just I'm finding myself preoccupied with sort of now that I'm off in the sticks, sort of. It's sort of losing a certain level of relevance. It's kind of interesting. But what I've been following most on Facebook are like the local groups around Taos and Española. It's way more fascinating news than I've seen in a long time, just kind of community stuff. That's pretty much it. Every once in a while I'll dip into Twitter, but yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I found Twitter to be, for me anyway, I'm not a national figure, so those seem to be the people who get a lot of twittering done, and no one really wants to know what I had for dinner or what my cat did last night.
I do.
I kind of want to know, yeah. What did you have for dinner?
You're a good cat.
That's why we have this show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I had a friend, a guy named Joy Ito, who was an early social media adopter, and I was an early adopter. And he was, I mean, he was kind of investing in various social media platforms. But he got me started on the thing of taking pictures of food. That was something he really liked to do.
Yeah.
And it became kind of a big deal online, you know, that people would share pictures of some exceptional meal they had, or sometimes some dorky meal that they had.
A corn dog.
And then, you know, people say, well, I don't know what you had for breakfast, but, you know, some people may be interested in what you had for breakfast.
Yeah, early on, I indulged in that on Facebook. I would always try to make a smiley face with my food or something strange, but it got old after a while because my favorite things started appearing with great regularity on the Facebook pages. It's like, oh, they've seen it before.
Well, I like doing one of my favorite writers is MFK Fisher, who wrote these beautiful essays about food and cooking. Real evocative, right? Incredible writer. And, you know, I try to, not that I could even come close, but when I'm in a mood and I'm cooking something, you know, playing with all the flavors and all that, Topo, I like to, you know, not just post the picture, I like to tell a story. So I'm enjoying it more these days for, and I think I'll be shifting into that more and more is, you know, the platforms for storytelling, not so much for, you know, news gathering. But I still do like putting up weird memes. You know, that won't go away. So,
well, that really does get to an important question about what social media is for or what it's good for. And certainly we see that people are making various uses of it. One of those uses is flaming each other and sort of focusing on divisiveness, focusing on politics, spreading opinions. And, you know, opinions aren't really worth very much. They don't weigh much. They don't have a lot of value. I just almost said something that was off color that people often say about opinions. I bet you can guess what I was thinking about.
I don't know that it's off color.
Okay. Opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one. And a lot of assholes have opinions.
Exactly.
Well, you know, John, everyone. What I've noticed about all the social media platforms is we've gone through what we early adopters went through when the internet first cropped up. We just had like email and news groups, and initially it was just a number of people who were just, you know, talking about whatever they were interested in, and then someone at a company caught on to it, and all of a sudden it became commercial users who were flooding into whatever space you were in. We saw it in email. We saw it when the web came along. You know, at first, you know, I had my little dorky little tiny website. I was really proud of it, and everybody was the same way. And all of a sudden, there was these big corporations moving in, and they started just flooding the internet. And we're seeing the same thing in social media. Initially, when I joined Facebook, it was pretty much an egalitarian thing. It was just a lot of normal folks in there. Now I can't go, you know, scroll down, you know, one or two things without seeing an ad or a company's Facebook page that really wants you to come and deal with them. It's like, so that's happening to just about every media platform.
Well, and twice this week, Hunter's been up staying with me for a few days. Twice she's heard me like just burst out. I'm trying to find information, right? Some of us use, you know, not social media necessarily, but the web, you know, to find solutions to thorny computer issues, right? And you can't go anywhere now without just being bombarded with ad after ad after ad. And I'm like, okay, this is going to make me not ever want to come to any of your sites anymore. I'm going to find, it's almost like I want to go back to the library to research things, you know, not, it's ridiculous. And I, you know, kind of to that point, I used to get news, you know, from my phone or from my computer. And now I find it, because of the nature of my work, I'm so exhausted by the end of the day, by the screen time. My idea of downtime is a stack of books, right? Like I don't read a lot of periodicals anymore. I used to a long time ago when I had the physical, I really enjoyed that. But now I'm getting curmudgeonly and I just don't care. You know?
Well, the thing about the commercialization kind of inspires me to discuss a piece of history here. As you all know, I was kind of there through the evolution of all of this social media stuff and was actually working on trying to build a social networking company consultancy. At the time that social media started to appear and be called that. So we had all of these platforms. In the 1990s, there was one social networking site called Six Degrees that lasted until about 2000 and went away. But in 2000, one came called Rise. And then after that, there was Friendster and there was Orkut and there was Facebook. And I have a lot of stories I could tell about those. But the point I want to make is that as more and more people started using online services that were either for social networking or social interaction and spending their time online and making what the industry refers to as user-generated content, that meant those eyeballs were not focused on traditional media, which is where marketing and advertising tends to occur.
Yeah.
So this term social media was actually a creation of the marketing industry because they were trying to get a handle on what do we do when our audience is fragmented and everybody's talking to each other and they're not looking at some site carrying ads, or they're not looking at a magazine, or they're not watching television. They're just talking to each other, right? So how that evolved was that the platforms that we now refer to as social media platforms, this is like marketing people were trying to get a handle on what is media now. It's social media. And this is the kind of media where we need to figure out how to do our marketing stuff. So after that, it became all about figuring out how to use these platforms where people were interacting with each other to make money. How can you hang ads on there? How can you get sponsorships? How can you, how can you make it work to make money? And there's two big things that came out of that. One is finding all sorts of ways to hit people with ads. And secondly, realizing that when you have a bunch of people in an online environment where they surrender some of their data or much of their data, a lot of their data, then you need to figure out how to harvest that data so that you can know your customer well enough to serve them the right ad, the one that'll trigger their purchase, right? So we have seen that whole thing evolving so that we went from having an idea of online community and online interaction and people hanging out together online and singing Kumbaya, that sort of thing. We've moved to an era where the user of an online service who is using it to interact with their friends and acquaintances and the people they like to fight with and that sort of thing, they're the product. And they're being sold as their attention is really the product, and it's being sold to advertisers.
Yeah.
And then they're also being mined, kind of like a gold mine. They're being mined for their data. And the industries are finding uses for the data.
To me, because I was in marketing, online marketing for a while, And to me, that's the difference, is the data that you're able to mine. I think everything else could be said of radio or of television or even of magazines. You know, you can't, I mean, if you look at Vogue anymore, it's like, you know, it costs you $30 and it's ads.
Yeah.
Well, this takes me back to Clubhouse, something I really wanted to point out about Clubhouse, because we discovered this today, where I was talking to one of my friends online and we were talking about Clubhouse, and there were like four of us in the conversation. I said, well, we're all on Clubhouse. And it was a surprise to him that he was on Clubhouse. And I actually took a shot of his profile and shared it with him, and he said, I didn't set that up. And his profile showed him on Clubhouse, and he was following like 51 people.
That's an iPhone Apple thing.
Well, here's what it is.
They signed him up.
I figured it out. So, and I found on Wikipedia, one of the things Wikipedia points out about Clubhouse, because people have been critical about how they use data, is that Clubhouse tries to get the contact list from all the people who sign up for it so that they can connect you with, you know, they can let you automatically follow all your contacts. So the reason this guy had a profile and was following 51 people was because when a contact list is shared with Clubhouse, if they find somebody on there that doesn't have an account, they create a profile for them.
Oh,
and every time,
that's creepy.
Every time they show up and he shows up in somebody's contact list, they add that he's following that person. They make the connection there. So he's following 51 people, though he's never gone to Clubhouse, signed up, or used it.
I've heard about this, yeah.
Yeah, that and whole requesting your contact list, that's one of the first things I always avoid, because, come on, that's the last thing you want to do is share all your, you know, your contacts to somebody or some company you don't even know. But,
and, you know, you think about like somebody who is like a PR person, right? You know, their worth is their contact list, you know, and it's not just, you know, it is, of course, it's beyond that, you know, it's the relationships they've established, but that's taking away their like their IP and just ripping it out. And I just like, wow, okay. I mean, it's not the same. You know, somebody else could go and try to go to your contact. And like, who the hell are you? But still, I mean.
Do you guys remember when it very first, when we were first starting to do communal type things on like Yahoo chat rooms and stuff like that? And there was a gay.com, I remember hanging out there. And it was just like that's all it was chatting and ads. And then they got smart and started, you pay for different levels, right? And so that's how you, and now there are apps, like I think other dating apps, I know there are apps on for other things that you pay for the app, and then you actually pay like a monthly fee, I think, and they don't give you ads, but I think they do send you like tons of email.
Yeah.
And they take
your data.
And that's
what I don't. Well, yeah, and then there's that. And so for this, and so for them, they have the texting that they, like back and forth that they can grab. If two people are texting each other via their app, right? So they can get that. And now with this Clubhouse, people are saying things and allowing themselves to be recorded. And it's really kind of scary. I'm just saying.
Yeah, there's not a lot of disclosure going on in a lot of apps. You know, one thing I've noticed that maybe taking business or not business eyeballs and ears away from social media is the growth in streaming entertainment. Remember how it was really rare to have something really cool streaming on the internet? I mean, there was the rare things, you know, I tried a few things, no one was going to watch those, but we have all the streaming. Every day I get an offer from a new streaming service, and then now they're starting to buy each other up. CBS Plus is now Paramount, and pretty soon I'm sure Apple will buy them all.
And what the hell is HBO Max? I'm still confused.
This is HBO. So HBO has been angling for years. Like, they built a thing called HBO Go.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, an evolution within that whole industry of, like, presenting content in video form, let's say. That was all coming through the air initially. Like, when I was a kid, we had like three television stations and we picked them up with an antenna, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then they started doing the cable thing. And with cable, you didn't have interference so much and you could get a lot more programming, a lot more channels and so forth. So that became a big deal.
And you could spend a lot more money.
So you've had this ongoing evolution of methods of delivery of streaming content. And years ago, when I was working with people in the technology industry here in Austin, one of the holy grail things they would talk about is getting high definition video to stream effectively, you know? And I remember at one big South by Southwest party that we did for the Digital Convergence Initiative, I don't know if you were there, Maggie, but this was a deal where Andrew Donahoe and some other people set up this thing where they were going to stream a band playing in San Antonio live to our party in Austin. And it worked, and it was high def. They had some problems with it at first, but they got it to work. And this was a big deal.
Yeah.
This is something they've been working on and working on and working on. Yeah. And we're at a point now where you can realistically stream really high definition content over the internet. So who needs cable anymore for anything other than internet service? So
yeah,
you have like Spectrum and cable companies like that are starting to get most of their business from people who are getting high-end internet connectivity services in order to access content, not through cable, but through the internet. From all of these services that are starting to appear and emerge. And HBO has been setting up for years to get ready for the point where they cease to be a cable thing and become more of an internet thing. And that's HBO Max. HBO Max, you can get.
Okay, so I've had
without having to have a cable.
Yeah, I don't have cable. I get everything through Fire. And so I've had this HBO thing, streaming thing, for a long time. So I was like, oh my God, are they making me upgrade yet again? Because there's only so many of these I can afford. The one thing though is YouTube has a TV channel, has a TV package.
Well, and Hulu too.
But this is different. This is like 85 channels that are live also, and it's
I'm saying Hulu does that, YouTube does that, there's Sling TV, there's several internet services that provide what cable used to provide, a whole bunch of channels.
Well,
I use Hulu.
I do too. Hulu's great, but it seems that I know Hulu doesn't have all of the channels that YouTube does. It's kind of I don't know how they did that.
They just have different, I mean, they license different sets of channels. Hulu has what I guess they think most of their customers will want, and maybe they're going to add stuff.
No, they're perfect for me. No, I don't even
want. And because they're owned by Disney, you can now bundle them with Disney Plus, you know.
Yeah, a lot of these
cost more.
Yeah, a lot of these deals.
It costs a little bit more, but you can get a bundle that is the live Hulu thing, which is like cable, which I guess you have. And then you can bundle that with Disney Plus and ESPN.
Wow, are we getting paid for this?
Yeah.
You know, totally. Where's the reason,
the reason there are so many of these streaming services that have different offerings is they have to pay those different outlets to carry on their service. So some of the channels that are carried charge a whole lot. Some are really cheap, and some of them don't want to be carried because they have a deal with some other streaming service. So it's a real
YouTube is expensive.
Cutthroat thing.
I don't know who they think they are. $80 a month.
Yeah, well,
you may have noticed recently that our local CBS affiliate disappeared from Hulu for a while.
Yeah, and KXAN disappeared from cable for a while.
You know, that's what happens. They were having a contractual disagreement, trying to come to terms about cost. That's what happens. And sometimes those things will go away because of that temporarily. But you could still watch it if you had CBS All Access, because it has the live CBS channel on it. Right. And now it's Paramount Plus, but it still has the CBS stuff.
I know. I'm
the Tyrell Corporation.
It's so true. Skynet. It's nuts.
Yeah. I kind of miss the days of, you know, even people doing their amateur stuff on YouTube. Everything's so slick now. I really miss public access and the stupid stuff that people would do. It's so hilarious.
We'll never do that with Plutopia.
No.
Man, Flash Jordan was an icon on public television here. She and her. Do you guys remember them? John, you have to know those brothers who invented that kind of 3D TV thing. They were like, they were twins almost, and they had this Elvis thing going on.
Oh, it sounds familiar. Yeah.
They drove a hearse. They invented this technology, some video technology.
Are you sure these weren't aliens?
No, I swear to God, I will find you some footage, but you have to promise to watch all 5 hours of it.
Well, you know, Austin's public access television gave the world Alex Jones.
Yes, I wish they would take it back.
Welcome.
Yeah, but then again, like, you know, I read Debbie Harry's autobiography, which was fascinating, great read, and then also one of Chris Stein's books, and they were talking about the days in New York, you know, when they did their cable access thing. It just sounded like so much damn fun. It was just people doing stupid shit and having a great time, and all the amazing stuff that came from that, and all the people that would drop by the studio and mess with, you know, like join in, and I don't know. There's just something.
Oh, Maggie.
Again, I'm being curmudgeonly again, but it's just back in my day.
You are going to so love the videos I'm going to send you.
Okay. All right. I'm.
Yeah, access cable in the Bay Area was really interesting up to the point that they got killed off by all the big broadcasters. But you used to be able to go on there, and you'd see all the cool bands that have their own shows on access.
Exactly.
Yeah, Berkeley Access Cable and the East Bay Access was always just, you know, all over the place, and some crazy stuff.
Weird stuff that people would have. Like, they would dress up and do weird shows, you know, where they play the flute and then talk about a horror movie.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I think of public access as the YouTube of UHF.
Yeah.
You know? I loved UHF, man. That was, but then I'm kind of glad that I raised Hunter on, like, you know, Lost in Space and original Star Trek and stuff like that. You know, it's just like, there's just something about the cheesiness of this stuff that's awesome. You know,
Did you do Land of the Lost?
I didn't. I think I might have shown her some of that, but I know I told her about it, right? And
The Sleestacks. They were terrifying.
Well, but what about H.R. Puff and stuff? Lidsville? What the hell was that? What was good?
Well, you know, it's become so easy and inexpensive to do streaming anything, audio, video, whatever, that, I was on Twitch today just looking through their various offerings just in the podcasting and, you know, Not the gaming. The gaming is a whole different thing. That's just crazed. Yeah. But in the podcasting thing, there are just dozens and dozens and dozens. And they're all live. And it's sad that almost every one of them has one viewer. Do you know that's mom in the other room?
Yeah.
And then there's some name folks, and they've got 36,000 live viewers. And that's kind of the key ingredient for anything on streaming media, is no matter how cool you think you are, you'd better have something that people will recognize and want to listen to. Otherwise, it's just you and mom, you know, on the channel.
Yeah. It's like all the, like there's so many bazillion musicians and stuff too, and just trying to find the, you know, the separate the wheat from the chaff. I mean, I do appreciate the fact that we do have these tools so that anybody can just give it a shot, right? That's exciting to me. I love
everybody
that.
Has a voice.
Right.
Yeah. I don't need to hear any more about us taking away anybody's First Amendment rights. Get on Zoom and talk away, man.
Ooh, there's something to talk about there. That's
the words
cancel
you can't
culture.
Say.
Cancel culture.
Have you seen the words you can't say on YouTube if you try to monetize your
I've
site?
I've said them.
They're the most bizarre words. You like terrorist.
Flugelhorn.
Maybe because it may be a euphemism for dick.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it may be on there.
Yeah.
Put your flugelhorn.
You mean I can't play my flugelhorn? Come on.
Somebody was referring.
They better not have anything against kazoos because I'm planning my all kazoo show soon.
Oh, I can't wait. I have to order one.
No, you really do want to wait. Trust me.
So there's a thing called the intellectual dark web. And one of the things that they're very focused on and talking a lot about these guys, and you can kind of, I mean, you can look up intellectual dark web on Wikipedia, and it has a list of people who tend to be considered part of this. And I find myself in conversation with a bunch of these guys, and they've been going really ballistic lately over this idea of cancel culture.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that really has them fired up this week is Dr. Seuss.
Oh, God. Yeah.
The Dr. Seuss, you know, empire decided not to publish 6 of his books because they had some racial insensitive stuff in them.
Well, that's not cancel culture. That's just business. It's a business. It's not the federal government doing that. It's the people that own the stuff.
Yeah,
so I
nobody.
Said, are you going to require the publishers to publish these books even if they don't want to? Does this mean that if I send a letter to the editor of the New York Times that they have to publish it or I'm canceled?
Well, you know what? That's right. Just like those people had to make me a fucking gay cake. Oh, wait. They didn't.
Well, let me tell you what my plan is. When McDonald's comes out with the McRib sandwich again, and then they stop doing it, I'm going to do a cancel culture suit on McDonald's. I want my damn McRib, even though it tastes like crap.
McDonald's canceled the McRib. Oh, my God.
Cancel culture.
I think we
it's
need
an
to
outrage.
Talk about our semantics and the words that we choose. I think cancel culture is, you know, is a stupid word for respect or consequence.
Well, I think consequences,
I think
here's another one, though.
Defunding the police is not a good thing to a term for what we want to do.
How about wokeism? Being woke. So this is another thing that these guys are up in arms about. Wokeism is a terrible thing, you know. Anti-white. Anti-racist.
Oh,
it's terrible to have all these anti-racist people around.
They're a big thing right now. So we all need t-shirts that say this, that white males are the most, discriminated against group in the United States right now.
I'm maligned.
Like, wow. Okay.
Well, that's a self-inflicted wound, though, really. If you look at it.
Well, that's...
Pierce Morgan was your spirit animal. Was every angry white alt-right man's
Well, I attribute that directly to Rush Limbaugh because I remember, you know, just bitching about this in the 90s especially. It's like, when did all these guys think it was okay to, you know, they're like rah 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 America, but when did you all become victims? You know, it's everybody else's fault. You know, they're like, what about up by your bootstraps and that pioneer spirit, that American pioneer spirit? No, you're all victims, right?
I'm trying to lean into that and make them accept. I mean, I really have. I've been trying.
Yeah.
to push that idea of victimization off on them, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You own it. And, you know, because then they'll call each other, you know, whatever, little or whatever, because that's derogatory for some reason. To call a man a woman, which I still don't understand. I'm like, really? That's what you want to call him?
Call him what?
Not that, a little bitch. That's, I can't stand it when men call other men little bitches. I'm like, no, that's not okay. Not in the queer community, not in any community. But that, you know, that said, I think, I think that's a big part of the issue.
Yeah, I have to speak up about that Piers Morgan being a spirit animal. My spirit animal is a rabid monkey, and he finds that very offensive to be compared to that guy.
I didn't mean you. I meant the white male, angry, alt-right.
No, but my spirit monkey doesn't want to be in the same genre as that guy.
Yeah, totally.
Well, he's been fired by everyone now, hasn't he?
I think so.
This time, right?
Yeah, he kind of stalked off that show, apparently.
I think he's going to have his next show on a Dixie Cups and String Network.
He says he's going to reemerge, which is kind of gross.
Now, there's an image I don't want to even think about. Where is he reemerging from?
What, from like some kind of like tar pit or something, or like, you know, I don't know.
Some orifice of some sort.
I was going to get you all a copy of this when I was doing my grocery shopping this afternoon. I found a lovely, I don't know what magazine it was from, but a lovely tribute issue devoted to the career of Rush Limbaugh.
Oh my God.
Was Medal it a Freedom Award winning?
Was it on a brown paper in crayon, or how was it?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how can people not? Do they just not recognize the racism that and the misogyny?
Well, if you're wearing a sheet over your head, and you know, that's their guy.
I accidentally said that I blamed him in part for the riots and in front of a Trump supporter, and I was told that this had nothing to do with Rush Limbaugh. This was all these crazy people.
It was all the Antifa actors.
This person believes that it was Trump supporters, but they don't believe that Rush Limbaugh had any, or Sean Hannity, or any of these people. And I'm like, but you're not understanding what paved the way for this to happen. It's like, it's just not, I refuse to see it.
Yeah, talk about Hannity and all that crowd. That whole uproar about criticizing the Air Force for coming out with a pregnancy flight suit for their officers, or, you know, their people who happen to be women that are pregnant. I mean, why don't you find a real subject, dude?
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to this thing about, I mean, think about the two big trending things this week, Dr. Seuss and Meghan Markle and Prince Harry.
Yeah.
My family is not racist.
We got things to worry about, and those are not it.
Yeah. And so does that mean that Trump was making us pay more attention? Because I sure know that it made me pay more attention when he announced and started running. I started paying way more attention to politics. And now what I had feared is happening to me. Every time I see his face, I won't watch that video. I will just straight up not watch it. I won't.
Well, it's kind of a sickness.
Just say no.
I mean, politics is inherently divisive. It's all about conflict, right? And that's not what we really are, right? We can take ourselves there. We can make ourselves be that thing. But, you know, human beings are, it sounds cliche, but we are all one, right? I mean, if you do the Buddhist thing long enough, you really start to understand what that means. And all of this stuff is just delusion, really. Politics is built on delusion. But we get really sucked into it. And you know, in my case, I said, this guy's a really bad guy. Whatever I may think about Republicans or Democrats or whoever, this guy is none of those things. He's just a bad guy and a crook and kind of a mobster. So I'm opposed to him. And it threw me into the political conversation in a much bigger way than I might like to be, because I always tried to avoid the partisan thing. I tend to, you know, I lean left, I lean Democrat, but I don't necessarily need to be part of that party, you know, because really it's all about the fight. And what I say is stop fighting people and do things that make sense, you know. And you can see how politics is fueling a lot of delusion. And I have a lot of respect for Biden because he is a guy who is sort of like ignoring the partisan stuff. And he's just head down working on stuff, trying to make things work. And he doesn't really care whether it's a Republican or a Democrat or all that stuff is, you can tell that's kind of irrelevant to him. He's just got a really strong sense of what needs to happen in order for people to be okay, in order for people to be safe and be able to live day to day and have good lives, you know,
like you do as if you're a public servant. That's the whole point.
Yeah, that's the only way you're going to get anything done. If you get into the flame wars of politics, you know, it goes out of control. You know, there are much more important issues at hand. Like, for instance, the Kardashians may be off of TV. Now,
that's what I heard.
Now there's your issue to really get
Kanye and Kim have split.
Oh, no. That's really terrible. So. I worry about that. That's kept me awake.
Well, I still think about, you know, kind of, I just remember pre-Trump how prevalent, remember reality TV was everywhere. Everything was reality shows.
Yeah.
Like, we don't really hear about that anymore. I mean,
now it's all escapism.
Exactly. It's kind of interesting. It's like we focus so much on the reality TV that it you know, thinking makes it so. It became reality for everybody, but I just you know, was thinking about that the other day. Like, man, remember when that was everywhere? Remember when there was that blogger Perez Hilton that was everywhere?
He's on Clubhouse now.
Perez is still around. Absolutely.
Yeah, but it just seemed like he was in your face constantly, all the time. You know, it was that whole. So, you know, the whole celebrity reality TV thing. And
The original Real World, I was actually clubhousing this with John the other day. They're having a reunion show. I know.
I can't wait for that.
Like 30 years later or something. And they're all going to get stuck in this house together.
Well, that sounds
that
sounds like fun. They can compare stretch marks and needle marks and show off
like
how many marriages they lost.
COVID.
Yeah.
Well, when reality really started to suck, I started watching cartoons. It's like enough. I'll go to something that has no. Looney Tunes actually helps straighten me out some days.
It does for me too. I actually bought a whole, like the whole catalog from that I can stream from Amazon, because when all this shit first started, I would make myself go to bed watching at least 30 minutes of cartoons.
Well,
because otherwise I would just.
That makes sense. Yeah. When it really gets bad, I pull out my complete DVD box set of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
That would be great.
That was a show that went way over the head of the kids, because these people were way hip, and they put some stuff over on those shows. If you watch it now, you go, I can't believe they got away with doing that. And these kids are going, oh, that was so funny. And the adults are going, holy shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Do you think that they consider the Warner Brothers cartoons like Bugs Bunny and Wile E. Coyote to violent now? Is that a thing.
They've been trying to get rid of certain episodes, and there's some of them that are just blatantly racist, you know.
Oh, hell yeah.
A lot of blackface stuff going on. It's like, you can park those.
Well, also, you got Bugs in drag, right? So is that going to be... who is going to be offended by that? I'm sure someone.
How do we know that Bugs wasn't trans?
Exactly.
We don't have his bio. It's her bio.
he does. Yeah.
He dresses like, and he was in the opera. He dressed as a woman with Elmer Fudd. They've got something going on there.
That's right.
I'm fine with it. I'm not judging.
There are so many more important things going on. It's like I'm going to leave the cartoon cancel culture to somebody else.
But again, okay, so cancel culture, that's a terrible
what a nasty name
it is. Yeah, and the defunding thing, that has to be so offensive to people. But when we were defunding education, it seemed to be fine.
Yeah.
But when you have police behind it, it's suddenly horrifyingly offensive.
Well, the whole thing of naming anything is so, it's such a minefield. Now, you have to be careful what you call your cause, because someone is going to take it, turn it around, and throw it back at you in a really nasty way. You know, the whole defund thing. What they did, they didn't... You know, so much mean, you know, take away all their money and make them go out and, and enforce law on the playgrounds or something. You know, they just meant do something smarter. But
Right. It's like I think sometimes these MAGA folks, World the Q folks, who are slowly waking up, who I see on YouTube and news shows and stuff, are... I think, you know, they're starting to kind of say that same kind of thing, that it's, you know what? I just lost my train of thought. That is happening more and more to me.
Well, I have a cute thing to say. Speaking of social media again, I've been following, I just started following a Reddit channel that's, I think it's called QAnon Casualties. And it's really interesting. It's people who've lost loved ones to Q, right? And then there's also an offshoot of it, of people who are recovering from QAnon, just sharing their experiences.
Yes,
it's really fascinating.
Is there a 12-step program?
Huh?
Is there a 12-step program for getting off?
They really got conned into it, though. I mean, these people, they're coming out of it and they're talking on these YouTube programs like they are just coming out of the family or Scientology. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah.
That one guy told his kid, if you turn me in, you're a traitor.
Yeah. You know, well, look how easy it is, you know, to that point where you're saying like Scientology and all that. I mean, think of all the cults, like one after the other. You read about the latest and the latest and the latest, and it's always about keeping the kids, keeping family away from other family members. I actually went a long time ago when I was writing, I wrote a column for so this was in 98, 99, a site called Planet Amazon, and it was a website, it was like a portal for women. And I wrote a monthly tour called Eccentricities with Maggie Duvall. And so I'd explore something bizarre. And I'd seen a story on NBC about this cult leader in Sedona called Gabriel of Sedona. And he, like, I wrote a whole piece about it. And, you know, like, I think I might have mentioned it on our show before, but
wow.
One of my greatest triumphs was, like, he has this, he believes himself to be this, like brilliant songwriter, singer-songwriter. He's kind of Charles Manson-y in that way, you know? And so part of his cult, they have a band called the Bright and Morning Star Band.
record.
I call them the Von Manson Family Singers. And anyway, But I was talking in the article, a lot of people weren't writing about this stuff at the time, about how many family members were distraught, kids, because their parents went into this thing, all their money went to this guy, and the kids were left high and dry. And they, one of the sites at the time that were kids who lost their family members asked if they could feature my article on their site. I was really proud of that. But
that is cool.
Yeah, but I've been on this stuff for a really long time, just because
I'm very culty. I love the Scientology. The Scientologists are my favorite. I love them. So.
Yeah. Well, John and I have been trying to start a cult all along. You know, this is our attempt at a cult. My goal is to become kind of like you remember the Guru Maharaji, the little genius. Yeah, I want to be like the 74-year-old genius.
That's right.
That doesn't have quite the punch that the Guru Maharaji had, but it's all the idea.
Like Dr. Severin and the space hippies in that episode of Star Trek, you know, Return Game. You know, I want to play a bicycle wheel. Great, so.
Now, well, I have to think about that.
One of my favorite Facebook page, one of the early ones I started following when I first got on, was Guru Filiac. If you've never seen that one, it's great. So he's written for years about the latest exposés on this guru and that guru and this group, and
wow,
really guru. Good stuff.
So
yeah.
It's Guru Filiac.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I gotta check that out. That's like everything about cults just fascinates me. Have you seen the Ricky Rodriguez story?
No. Who's this one?
Okay, so the family, the guy, the family, they were here for a little while. They built the place out where everybody gets married, the theater. I can't remember the
name. Oh, One World.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It was them. And also they were out in California and River Phoenix, the Phoenix people were part of it, right?
Oh, that one. Okay,
so
yeah.
There was a ton of sex happening between parents and their own children. And they would, yeah, and they had these, they would draw these little pamphlets, and they would have young girls go out and get guys, and they called them fishing, and they would hook them and bring them back, and they would, yeah, it was fucked up. So this kid, he was supposed to be the new prophet or whatever, and he decided he was over it, and he makes this whole video in his kitchen at his table as he's just loading clip after clip after clip into a gun. This, I mean, 2 hours worth of him talking while he loads these clips, and he's telling us about how he's going to go find his mother and kill her.
Oh, wow.
And he ends up not finding her, but her best friend. So he killed her and then killed himself. It is, I'll link. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, totally. Oh, my God.
Yeah, cults are bad.
Well, for next week's show, I'll have to provide the music because somewhere in my tape library, I have a tape of the Manson family record album.
Oh, my God.
Talk about creepy music. Aside from it being really untalented, it's really creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I would love to discuss cults and have you have a soundtrack in back. That would be so fun.
Yeah, let's have Charlie singing his songs.
Let's do the special cult episode. I bet I could dig out my
We are a cult.
My Gabriel Sedona article somewhere. So.
We can do a half hour talking about cults we're aware of, and then the other half hour sort of working on starting our own cult.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I still want to be the 74-year-old genius.
That's right.
Somewhere there's a market for that.
But we have to have a weird fish market. Names, too. We have to come up with weird names.
Oh, I have one. I've always
like Dawn Toilet Water Rising Star or something like that. Sorry, it's been a long day.
I'm going to be the...
It's okay, but you need to put some more thought into that.
Yeah, I want to be the Guru Bobalicious.
It doesn't have quite the nice ring to it yet, so...
I'm expecting everyone to have their cult names by the next meeting.
That's right.
Here's a 4-minute warning.
Okay.
And here's another
Maggie,
warning.
Do you have a light in there?
Do I have a light?
A light that you can turn on.
Oh, like
you look like you're sitting in the dark.
You're in a silhouette.
I've been taking screenshots of the group because we're going to use this as our podcast.
Yeah, that's part of the 5-minute warning is you're going to have to re-listen to this now on the podcast.
Maybe my salt lamp would give some light. I don't have everything set up. There's
that's
a little
pretty good.
Baba lamp.
Everybody should smile now.
Ooh. I can show my Three Stooges t-shirt.
Do it.
Smile.
Here we go.
We're adorable.
Oh, really?
So who are we having on next week, guys?
Ruth.
Ruth Glendinning, and there's somebody else. Who is the other person with her? Next week, by the way, is South by Southwest all week.
Yeah. Wow.
And what does that mean for us this year?
Well, I'll be doing it.
Well, the other guy is, Kent. His name is Kent.
Oh, that's who, Kent Dahlgren, I think that's his name. That's who she does her, she's working with him on the Anti-Fragile Playbook, I think that's.
Oh, cool.
What they're working on. And I think, I believe they have a podcast as well, so.
Well, here's the implication of South by Southwest next week.
Holy moly.
This is what it's done to me.
Yep.
I was happy to see that Adrian Mishler has been invited to do the keynote. Did you see that?
Oh, shoot. I haven't even grabbed any of the keynotes yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I grabbed all the keynotes. Here. A lot of interesting
people. Our
homegrown
Adrian, who's now amazingly world famous, is giving the keynote.
Mayor Pete will be there.
It's going to all be online.
Oh, yeah, it's all online, yeah, and including the movies and the music. So it's you won't have any bandwidth left here in Austin or anywhere else next week.
Oh, yeah, wow.
I'm dropping in on live hearings right now of, like, Derek Chauvin. They are selecting his jury right now.
It's really I'll bet fun. That's interesting.
It is.
We're kind of down to the wire here. Can you believe we've been talking for an hour?
Yes.
Nonstop?
We're fascinating people. What?
That's our story, and we're sticking to it.
I'm here to check out Clubhouse, too.
Yeah, well, we'll all get together on Clubhouse and do something there and just see what it's like.
Yeah, well, I'll get on it.
Okay, everybody out there listening to this, get Clubhouse. And we'll send you the invitation when we figure out what the hell we're doing.
Yeah. We'll club you.
Get clubbed.
Bye,
like,
everybody.
Like a bunch of seals. You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @Plutopia News. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia.